Welcome to this Touch podcast activity, which has been recorded for Touch Immunology. This podcast aims to bring you expert perspectives from a multidisciplinary team on the management of eosinophilic esophagitis, or EoE. Specialists in the MDT involved in caring for patients with EoE share their understanding of the pathophysiology of this condition, perspectives on the clinical and symptomatic burden for patients, and discuss disease management strategies, covering both dietary and pharmacological approaches. This activity is funded by an independent medical education grant from Regeneron Pharmaceuticals, Inc. and Sanofi Genzyme. This activity is jointly provided by USF Health and Touch IME. In this podcast, a gastroenterologist, an allergist immunologist, and a dietitian explore the symptoms of eosinophilic esophagitis, or EoE, and their impact on patients, and diagnostic and nutritional issues, including the impact of uncontrolled disease, in a case-based discussion of an adult newly presenting with food impaction.
Hello, my name is Professor Arjan Bredenoort and I'm a consultant gastroenterologist at the Amsterdam University Medical Center and Professor of Neurogastroenterology and Motility at the University of Amsterdam in the Netherlands. I am joined today by Professor Jonathan Spergel, Professor of Pediatrics at the Perelman School of Medicine at University of Pennsylvania and Chief of the Allergy Section at Children's Hospital Philadelphia in the USA. I'm also joined by Dr. Isabel Skepala, a consultant allergy dietitian at the Royal Brompton and Harefield NHS Foundation Trust in London, UK, and clinical lead for the Adult Food Allergy Service. In this section, we will discuss the symptoms of eosinophilic esophagitis and the impact of EoE on patients, including nutritional needs and progression of uncontrolled disease. We will start by discussing a patient. This is Martin. He's a 33-year-old male and has a personal history of rhinitis, asthma, diagnosed in the late teens. There's a family history of allergy and asthma, and he's a non-smoker, social drinker, and he presents in the A&E with a food impaction. Over the last 5 years, dysphagia has become more severe, and he frequently experiences heartburn when eating. He reports adapting his eating habits to try to reduce future impactions and having a fear of eating solids. His symptoms are impacting his mood and social life. And there's the endoscopy showing white exudate, mucosal edema, multiple rings and linear vertical furrows in the esophageal mucosa. A biopsy showed up to 48 eosinophils per high power field, and on the blood test there's a complete blood count and basic biochemical tests are all normal, no eosinophilia. Dr. Spergel, after the first question here for you is, are these patient symptoms typical of an adult with EoE?
It is sort of classic for EoE. I mean, the classic dulse that we see in adolescents or these ones presenting with dysphagia and food impactions. They've been sort of modifying the behavior, refusal to eat, and really just adapting what they're doing, like overchewing and drinking water to eat. And so this is a very classic presentation that we see in our patients with EoE. We like to say read the textbook.
Thank you. And Dr. Skepala, it's this eating behavioral modifications. Does that sound familiar to you?
Yes, it's very common. They often eat very slowly. They often report having to drink lots of water to get food down. And often when you ask them about their eating habits, they do report that they've stopped eating meat or chicken or rice because those are the foods that often get stuck.
And is this because of the texture of the food or because of the allergenicity?
It's all to do with the texture, so it can be a bit misleading. Usually the food that's causing the problem is consumed without a problem. So it's the texture that causes the problem and it leads to a very long meal time usually.
Yes, thanks. Dr. Spergel, how do these symptoms differ from a typical a child with EoE?
So it's sort of, this is how an adolescent would present, but the young child doesn't have that sort of chronicity of the disease, so the esophagus is probably not so damaged. So the young child often hurts to eat, so the infants and toddlers present with more failure to thrive, refusal to eat. As they get a little bit older, they present with more abdominal pain and vomiting and more actually classic reflux. They look like they have reflux. And then when they come adolescents, they present like our case here in Martin with sort of dysphagia and food impactions.
So is this because of that disease is different in children, or is this because they can't really express themselves?
I actually think it's more of a natural progression of the disease that you just see as you have chronic disease, you have long-term damage, the esophagus gets more damaged and fibrotic. And I think it's a truly just the chronic nature of the disease. I mean, obviously an infant and toddler is not going to be able to express themselves, but this isn't a school-aged child can say, hey, it hurts to eat, but I think it's just chronicity more than anything else.
Thank you. So we'll move now to the diagnosis of EoE. And it is clear in this example that a patient presents with the food impaction and then undergoes a parendoscopy with biopsies. Is this typically how this is performed?
So I'm going to refer that question back to you. I mean, so the time we see them as allergists, it's really more they've been diagnosed. So when you see an adult or even an adolescent who has feeding problems, do you immediately go to an endoscopy or do you do anything else beforehand?
Yeah, so I think it's a good point. I think the age matters a lot. So in the patient at more advanced age, we're always concerned when there's food impaction and dysphagia about the presence of malignant lesion, and patients will always undergo endoscopy. While in younger patients, it might be that they are considered as reflux disease, which is not really a very strong indication for endoscopy. And so it is sometimes possible that there's a very long physician delay in diagnosis, apart from the patient delay that's also there, of course. And that's also because the reasons we just discussed about the eating modifications. Often these young patients, they adapt their way of eating and don't see this as a problem until the symptoms got worse and worse. Do you think these blood count and basic biochemical tests and blood eosinophilia, do you think this is essential?
We almost never do anything. We almost, it's a purely endoscopy biopsy workup. It's really the only test occasionally we will do is we'll do a swallowing study to make sure that there's no sort of narrowing of the esophagus. But otherwise, it's a clinical diagnosis with an endoscopy and biopsy. We don't do any extra blood work. I don't know if you guys do anything at all, in either one of you guys. No.
It is, I know it is, it often performed, but it's seldom really useful. So I move to another topic, and that's the nutritional needs and the nutritional considerations of patients with EoE. Dr. Skipala, could you comment on that, please?
Yes, I mean, certainly in adults, they tend to be quite well nourished. A lot depends on other things. So whether the compensatory eating habits have resulted in a reduction in their intake, whether they have an IgE-mediated food allergy, so they're already excluding foods, which certainly I think does happen in children. But also, you know, other reasons, they may have some aversive eating problems, which can cause a reduction in nutrition. And of course, for children, often the key foods in EoE that trigger EoE, milk and wheat, are very necessary and provide a lot of nutrition in the diet. But in adults, nutritional issues tend to be less, and Certainly in children, if they have correct diagnosis and management, then you can minimize the nutritional issues there as well. I think the important thing is to avoid being on exclusion diets for a long time when you're diagnosing EoE, and then making sure the management is correct.
Yes, thank you. And we see in this patient that there's a considerable patient delay. Often there's a doctor's delay. Where can that lead to, Dr. Spergel? How does the EoE progress?
I mean, what I worry about the progression, I think progression is two things. I think we worry about clinical symptoms. They sort of now expect to be eating abnormally with that eating delays that Dr. Scopolo talked about being normal. So they don't know what to eat anymore. Then I worry about from a more of a histological and issues of getting chronic fibrosis, which we don't really know how much of that really reverses. And you just begin to have chronic disease, and then you end up needing more of a way to open up the esophagus, whether either mechanically with dilatations or potentially with various medications.
Yeah, and at that point you're getting at the irreversible features of the disease. Did you agree?
Yeah, I do. I worry about it because I think in children and adolescents we can reverse those symptoms. In adults, it's really hard to reverse those sort of narrowing of the esophagus without sort of mechanical dilatation. So I think there is a reversible. You get fibrosis, and we need to fix it.
Yes. Well, I would like to thank you, Jonathan Spergel and Isabel Scapala, for this discussion. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this Touch podcast. You can access more content on this topic at www.touchimmunology.com. Don't forget, there are two other chapters in this series, so please listen in for further insights from the multidisciplinary team. This activity is part of a Touch curriculum of activities on EoE to be released on Touch Immunology during 2022, including a Touch Congress, which is available now, and forthcoming Touch panel discussion and Touch expert opinions.